15 or 16 years later, we're still, many of us who are well aware of what happened and know it to be an inside job and know who's involved and can name names, are still trying to convince our friends who won't wake up, who won't do anything other than call us conspiracy nuts or want to get on with their own lives and don't want to bother with it, don't want to continue to talk about the 3,000 that were killed in the buildings, that don't want to talk about the 1,600 people that died because of the after effects of breathing in the smoke that they were told was safe when it wasn't. It was filled with asbestos. So in one fell swoop, the murder had been planned to take these people out, to murder those people, to plant a charge, to destroy the evidence, and it was all going to be covered up the next day anyway when the massive remainder of the attacks, you know, were factored in. But I think people are aware, but we're afraid. And I think that every time we take one act of courage and we put it out there, that 10 people are braver, that will then perhaps say something when they might not have, write something when they may not have.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. You know, we all know the 9/11 narrative is just bogus. The government story is just not true. It's so obvious. Anybody who has spent any amount of time on that knows that from the World Trade Center 7 that is across a two-lane highway and didn't get hit by a plane, had some small fires and still went down in its own footprint, to the Pentagon completely engulfing, you know, swallowing a plane. And there's paper that's sitting there that's not even singed, whereas the World Trade Center's the planes got so hot that it took down the buildings, but at the Pentagon, it didn't even singe paper that's right there. So there's just so many strange, obvious problems with the narrative. And I ran across Patrick Elagio, and he has a theory for the Pentagon, something that people haven't spent quite as much time on as some of the other areas. And he has solved or come up with a theory that answers some of the questions where there's holes that you can't explain with the Pentagon that I think is really interesting and could explain what might have happened there. And so I'm bringing him on, and he's going to describe what his theories are and how he came up with it. And he has a book out that he's calling His Story on the Pentagon 9/11 attack. I think you would find it really interesting. But let's get into that interview now with Patrick Elagio. Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the show.
Sarah, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I'm really glad that you decided to come. You are writing a book that proves the murder on 9/11, you know, from the attack that happened. But before we get into that, I want to talk about first what your background is briefly, and then when it comes to 9/11, why you decide to primarily focus on the Pentagon.
Alrighty. Well, I'm a telecommunications expert by trade. I spent 25 years of my life in that field. But for the last 17 years of my life, I've been running my own company until I retired in September of this year. It was doing audio productions for business. So that's all pretty much irrelevant. I was a regional sales director for a number of major corporations and sold software technologies to major corporations. So open architecture. So I know a lot about the information field, but it's not my area of concern now, nor has it been for the last 17 years. Going back, I guess, when did I get interested in doing research? I think I was 10 years old, and I can tell you exactly where I was standing within a few square feet when I heard about the JFK murder. And then you hear in more current studies that George Herbert Walker Bush and Richard Milhouse Nixon can't tell you where they were that day. Well, that's bogus, and a 10-year-old kid can tell you where he was. I think these folks can tell you where they were. So even as a 10-year-old, I was not convinced, and I researched and researched my entire life. I remember reading 1,000-page books when I was 13 years old on the Kennedy assassination and all the stuff that came out and the garbage of the Warren Commission. So I've always had that seed in me.
Were you satisfied? Were you satisfied with the documents that came out? lately?
Never. Not because of the magic bullet theory. No way. I was a sharpshooter.
No, but how about the new documents that just got released? Does that help your? Does that satisfy you?
I haven't spent a lot of time looking at the new one, Sarah, because I've already researched to such a degree that I can tell you what happened.
Okay.
I've already written in a previous book, probably 1,000 or 5,000 words on what happened and who was involved. So we can go into that another time, but that's a whole nother conversation. And the story goes much deeper than most people realize. It's easy to ask who wasn't involved.
Oh, geez. Okay, so why did you decide to focus on the Pentagon?
That was a late decision. And what happened is there were recent pictures that came out, and I had been researching 9/11 before that, many other events, Waco, Oklahoma City, all the ones that people focus on, and I've been doing this research for 25 years. Besides the ongoing Kennedy things that we've learned about. But when I saw the most recent pictures released by the FBI, there was one picture that woke me up. I went to bed one night having all of this new information in my head, and I woke up in the middle of the night with the answer to the 9/11 Pentagon attack. And I went then and tested that, and as I tested that, I found it to be absolutely rock solid, and that's what the book explains. And rather than give you the punchline first, let me kind of identify why I focus specifically on the Pentagon only. We all know about Buildings 1 and 2, the World Trade Centers. Most of us that did find out about Building 7 found out about that 47 skyscraper that fell into its own footprint. We found out about that late, and we didn't find out about it because they didn't want us to know about it. But there was a 47-story skyscraper that fell at nearly freefall speed into its own footprint that wasn't hit by a plane or any major debris, had a few minor fires, and yet this steel skyscraper fell.
Yeah, and it was across a two-lane highway away from the other buildings.
Yeah, exactly. And the point is that was when most people realized there was a smoking gun, and that's when the story of an inside job started going around, and people were called conspiracy theorists and nuts and all this other stuff. But let's go back to that conspiracy theory comment. That was invented by the CIA in 1977 or 1967 to shut up people that were starting to talk about the JFK assassination. And so we were supposed to believe this ridiculous Warren Commission report, this magic bullet that comes out pristine and all this other stuff, and, you know, circles around and breaks all these bones and doesn't have any dents on it, which is ludicrous. The 9/11 scenario is so complex. By the time you add in Buildings 1 and 2, Building 7, the Shanksville hole in the ground where there's no plane or no bodies, the Pentagon attack, which where's the plane, where's the engines, there's a just so much confusion. So I, in order to try to explain this and why I focused, I thought of an analogy. And that analogy is, let's say you enjoy putting puzzles together. So when you're a child, you get a puzzle, it's got 30 or 40 pieces in it. But when you're an adult, you're a good puzzle maker, maybe that puzzle has 1,000 pieces. So I'm going to give you 5 puzzles. I'm going to give you the Pentagon. I'm going to give you the Buildings 1 and 2 as a second gift. I'm going to give you the Shanksville as a third gift and Building 7 as a fourth gift. And then, because I'm such a nice government, I'm going to give you a fifth puzzle of all of this misinformation and information that you hear from the propaganda machine. Now, to make matters worse, I'm going to take all of these puzzle pieces and I'm going to throw them into one pile. And I'm going to take the boxes away so you don't even see what the picture's supposed to look like when you're done with it. And just because you're such a good puzzle solver, I'm going to turn all those pieces upside down so all you can see is the cardboard. Now put them together, Sarah. Now come up with the answers. And 15 or 16 years later, we're still, many of us who are well aware of what happened and know it to be an inside job and know who's involved and can name names, are still trying to convince our friends who won't wake up, who won't do anything other than call us conspiracy nuts or want to get on with their own lives and don't want to bother with it, don't want to continue to talk about the 3,000 that were killed in the buildings, that don't want to talk about the 1,600 people that died because of the after effects of breathing in the smoke that they were told was safe when it wasn't. It was filled with asbestos. And so I realized that in order to make this thing real, and when that last picture came out, there's a single picture of a hole. It's on an inner ring of the Pentagon that the nose cone of the plane was supposed to have poked out. So the plane comes into, and it comes in from the right side of the building, enters at the first and second floor, goes through the building, pokes through the Pentagon is five layers. There's an outer E ring, then there's a D ring, and then there's a C ring, a B, and an A ring. It supposedly poked all the way through the C ring. Now, anybody who knows anything about aerodynamics and planes realizes that the most of the nose cone is hollow. It's aluminum. And so it's going to hit steel beams, it's going to hit all of this debris, and it's still going to come out the other side, poking a perfect 12-foot circle, and that didn't make any sense. And so that was the picture that when I went to sleep, I realized was the clue. And so in most instances, we're shown, you know, you start at A, the planes are hijacked, you go through this series of events, being in the government story, they're conspiracy theory. I call it the black hole conspiracy theory because theoretically, according to them, a pilot that was a lousy pilot could barely fly a Cessna 172, hijacked a 757, and did a 330 degree turn in order to come down to that specific spot in the Pentagon. And was able to avoid something called ground effect. It's when you go down so quickly, there is a cushion below you and before you in the ground. So as you're pulling up, you could not defeat ground effect and knock down these five light poles, which supposedly prove the entrance direction of the plane. Entered into the building, and yet the wings, there's no wall, there's no marks on the walls. There's no marks from the tail fins, which are much higher than the fuselage, and supposedly collapsed into this what is it, 16 to 20 foot hole. We didn't see that picture initially. They showed us the one where the whole roof had collapsed. And some of the pictures I sent you, I showed you those as the second and third and fourth pictures. But if you look at the very first picture, it's the one of just the hole, and it's trivial. It looks like maybe it was hit by a missile. But that's what I thought for the longest time. But that plane supposedly all collapsed in upon itself. And the wings, the 7,000-pound titanium engines, were not on the front lawn. They were supposedly in that hole. There were no marks on the walls. The steel beams were poking outward towards the outside versus being pushed inward. There were all kinds of anomalies that just made no sense. And then as you go into this entire story, you realize that it just doesn't make any sense at all, and it's just too confusing. And even just looking at the Pentagon from that direction, A to Z, it makes zero sense. Now let's wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with my revelation that picture, that circle, that perfect hole, was not an exit wound, it was an entrance wound. And that's exactly how I thought of it. Just like, I don't know if you ever saw the Kennedy assassination photos. Normally when you see the tracheotomy shot, you don't see the single hole in his throat because they don't want you to see that one. They show you the tracheotomy that was done on a dead man with 30% of his brain blown out. Mm-hmm. Why did they do that? Because they wanted to cover up the entrance wound in his throat. So my revelation was that wasn't an exit wound. That was an entrance wound. That was a planted charge. Now, why did that plane hit why did that plane do a 330-degree descent and hit that exact spot? That exact spot of the Pentagon is where the $2.3 trillion that had gone missing from the Pentagon, as told to us by Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld the day before on September 10th, had gone missing from their budget. Now, that's where the evidence was. That's where the 125 civilian contractors were located that were hired to find out where the money had gone. So in one fell swoop, the murder had been planned to take these people out, to murder those people, to plant a charge, to destroy the evidence, and it was all going to be covered up the next day anyway when the massive remainder of the attacks, you know, were factored in. So think of the Pentagon, how huge it is, and what the specific odds were of a plane hitting that exact spot. That's besides all the other anomalies that, one, the plane couldn't have done the maneuver. Even only the most experienced of pilots could have even pulled the maneuver. An amateur on that Cessna 172 had no chance of doing it. And so I started looking at the attack from the opposite direction. Now, that explains why the beams are blown outwards versus inwards. It also explains why column 14AA, which is dead center to where that nose cone would have hit, is still intact. It explains why those specific people and that specific evidence was destroyed. It also helps you understand how the person that planned that attack decided to knock those five light poles down that were 40 foot tall, 247 pounds apiece, to prove the angle that the plane came in. And in reality, those light poles were taken down the night before, all except for pole number five, which is part of the story that comes to us through the testimony of Mr. England, who was the taxi cab driver. And there's a picture in there of his cab with his windshield bashed in. And his story is that the pole, now he's approaching the plane at 40 miles an hour. The plane's approaching him at, this is his story. He doesn't know the speed, but the plane was supposedly approaching at like 400 knots and severs that light pole, but goes through his windshield. And, then he gets out of the car, and silent strangers, he calls them, gets out from a van behind him and helps him pull the light pole out from his windshield. And then he falls down, and it falls on top of him, and he tells a story how then the stranger just gets in his car and drives away. Now, imagine you're him. You just saw the Pentagon get hit by a plane and blow up, and you're going to be worrying about the pole in your car? That's ridiculous. Or you're the person in the van, and you're going to get in your van and just drive away when the Pentagon's in flames? All of this stuff made no sense. But one of the there are three videos that I include in the book that reference to where they're located so you can see them for yourselves, that I use to put this together for people. And one of them was done in 2006 by the Citizens Investigation Group. Now, this was the team that went down and investigated the eyewitnesses and interviewed them again. Now, it's important to note that every one of these 14 eyewitnesses had already testified. They had testified to the Library of Congress and to another national organization. I don't have the name on the tip of my tongue, but it's also a very verifiable group. Then that was done weeks or months after the 9/11 attack.
How long is that video?
There's two different versions of it. The first one is memory again, because I show three of them, are like typically in the 40 to 50 minute range.
Okay.
So they're easy. Plus, I show in the book the reference points to go to these specific. So if you don't want to watch the whole thing, you can just go to that specific point. And I try to get people to that exact spot in the video. Now, the citizens, here's the important thing. The official story from the government is that it came in from the south side of Columbia Turnpike, and their simulations show that. But simulations are just that, they're make-believe. But when you take into effect that the Cessna pilot couldn't have done that maneuver, when you take into the fact that ground effect would have defeated the plane's ability to come down that low, go to ground level, and punch into the building just barely above the first story, into the first and second story, knock those poles down. They painted themselves into a corner by coming up with that little that box. They painted themselves into a box. And when you go back and you listen to the eyewitness testimony, it's important to recognize that every single one of them, there's like four or five of the 14 are expert witnesses. They're Pentagon police officers. There are other police officers. There's the guard in the guard shack. In one of the pictures, it's probably the second picture. It shows the building from the left side where there's just people, a woman, a heavy woman in white, looking over, being helped or something. But there's a guard shack in front of the Pentagon. It's a separate building. It's obvious. But one of the eyewitnesses was in that guard shack, and he saw the plane flying directly at him. Not from the other side, the south side, but directly at him. And that corroborates the other witnesses that all saw it approach from the north side of Columbia Turnpike. So then what does the government do? They come out with another simulation. I think it was done at Purdue University. Again, all this information's in the book, and I'm just trying to remember to keep this conversation flowing and not have to stop to look up quotes and such.
Sure.
But the simulation from the north side, they run the simulation side by side, and they show this in the documents that I show, or the videos that I show. And in the second one, the plane is approaching from the north side and from a much higher altitude, and it's impossible for it to hit those light poles or to have entered the building at that point. Okay, so we're back at the same point. What do we have now? Two stories from the government, neither of which jive with each other, but the second one at least jives with the eyewitnesses, but couldn't hit the spot they tried to explain away. Plus, the Purdue University one shows at the last moment the engine disappears, because in order for that plane to have done what they said it does, the engine would have had to hit the ground. So what do? They just make it disappear. So they, you know, you can do anything with the simulation. You can turn it inside out and make it evaporate. So again, everything coming out of the government is a lie, and everything being testified to by the eyewitnesses is absolutely verifiable and consistent. So again, going back and now looking at this thing from the Z to A, let's going backwards. If there's an explosion and it kills those people, and you've now planted this this story that, you know.
So hold on a second. You think it's just a bomb that they put in there, or do you think it was a missile from the other side?
No, no way. No way.
You think it was a bomb?
There's no way to launch a missile. There's no doubt.
Okay.
It's a shaped charge. You can look at the hole. It's a perfect circle, 16 to 20 feet tall. There's no way you launch a missile from inside that does that.
Well, it looks like a perfect you got a beam or like a perfect like bullet type hole that's in the Pentagon before the roof collapse. Would a bomb be able to do that perfect shape?
I'm not an expert there, Sarah, so I'm not going to give you answers. I don't know. I just will tell you from my gut, it's saying this thing was at least one bomb, if not multiple charges. If it was something I was planning, and again, to come up with the sociopath's plan, you kind of walk in their shoes. You got to make yourself a little crazy. You have to make yourself that you don't care about people and think of it like they think. And so I did that, and for days I walked around in their shoes, and I tried to think, what would I do? And the answer is I'd make sure that nobody came out alive. I'd make sure that all the evidence was destroyed. And
whether so it could have been a series of bombs that created that shape.
Absolutely, because if you look at the original hole, it's not very big. I mean, the very first picture is just a fireball at the bottom. And yet, if you look at the massive damage and the aftershots, the whole roof collapses in on it. And so those were perhaps after charges as well. I honestly don't know. All I know is that the flight path that plane allegedly took could not have been done by an amateur. That ground effect would have prevented it from going that low to the ground without, you know, being, I don't know if it's a cushion of air or what, but ground effect would have to be explained by a physics expert and not by me. I just look at the fact that if those poles are hit by a 200,000-pound plane flying at 400 miles an hour, that they don't fall over, they get ejected. They get hit, and they fly. And yet these poles were just laying down peacefully. And that the car that Mr. England, the taxi cab driver, was driving, doesn't just get it inserted through his windshield and then pull it out and then come out unscathed and not a scratch on the hood of the car. There's a key. Not a scratch on the hood of the car. Think of hitting a baseball. I mean, just the power of a bat against a ball. Now, even if that ball is attached to something, it's flying. So I don't see them just laying down. But going back, there's a number of anomalies now that, you know, this 9/11 at the Pentagon was not my major focus for a long time because I grew up in New Jersey. My family, I was in Vermont at the time, but my family was watching the towers burn from the Washington lookout in the top of Greenbrook, which is my hometown where I lived for many years. And from that lookout, you could see the buildings. You can see the towers, the smoke from the towers. So it was a very sad thing for us because it felt personal. Plus, I worked in New York City for a number of years. But going back to some of the best studies that I saw originally and that I would recommend that people that want to understand, visualize and see these things for themselves, study the videos for pilots for 9/11 Truth and then architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. There's some amazing things that go on there. And that's, if I back up a step, I wanted to focus on the Pentagon, but in order to do that, I need to kind of back up a step to the 9/11 by the pilots, because they actually were able to get hold of the radar images, and even with the supposed exercises that were going on that day, that masked this entire thing. Again, remember that fifth puzzle piece of all the misinformation and convoluting information that was used to obfuscate this whole thing. One of the things that the pilots found out is that there were two planes in particular that were the hijacked planes that did a do-si-do in midair with two planes that I suspect that were military drones that were used to fly into the World Trade Centers. These you know what a do-si-do move is?
I assume it's something where they switch spots.
It's a term used for square dancing. Take your partner and do-si-do. You lock elbows and you go in circles. And so basically two pairs of planes, did a do-si-do. And this is shown on the video. And this is shown on radar, I mean. And then what happened is military drones, and I'll explain to you why I come to that conclusion in another moment, took the flight path of the planes that collided with the World Trade Centers. And the other planes, the ones with the passengers that were allegedly hijacked, continued on. Now, after the...
So now, did those people that were on that plane not realize their plane was the one that they were saying was the one that... I mean, how did those people on those planes not talk?
You're still seeing it from the eyes of the government. First of all, let me tell you what happened.
Well, maybe those people didn't even realize that was the plane.
Maybe those people were spies. Maybe those people were secret agents that were going to be shown to be dead and then go and do something else. Maybe they were scientists that were going to be used in underground laboratories or in secret projects. Maybe they were, I don't know what they were. All I know is that after the planes hit the Pentagon, the transmissions that these planes put out, I'm not sure what they call those again, I'm having a lapse, but there's an identifier for these planes. They were still shown to be flying even after they allegedly flew into the buildings, because they were still flying. They flew, they landed safely, and whoever was on those planes, whatever those, I don't know, that's a really good question. Who are those people? What were their duties? Maybe they were in the witness protection program, some of them. Maybe some of them were scientists. Maybe some were operatives that were being given a cover. I don't know. All I know is that they didn't die going into the towers.
That some of the people they claimed were the hijackers were found alive, and they actually, some of them did press conferences saying, "Hey, I didn't do that,
Here
and I'm alive." Yeah.
Exactly. We're supposed to believe that a man inside a cave halfway around the world coordinated this entire thing, and that's about it. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
I think people have woken up to that. Now it's just, how do we? The problem is the government has gotten so brazen that we don't believe them at all on things, and it's It's terrible. But there were items in those buildings that are now gone. They were either taken beforehand or they were destroyed. Can you go through some of those items that were in the Trade Center building so people can understand, you know, the magnitude of this theft or of destroying evidence?
Well, depending on who you listen to, there were three thefts. There's a man out there by the name of Jim Willey. He's called Golden Jackass, and he's incredibly knowledgeable, and he has a staff of people all over the world that this is just one conversation he would go into, but he understands an awful lot of what's going on in the various aspects of government and such. But he talks about a theft of $100 billion in bearer bonds, $100 billion in diamonds, and $100 billion in gold that was in the bottom of the World Trade Centers. That was it's the biggest bank in the world. That's one thing. Then there's evidence on Building 7. I think in Building 7, if my memory serves me right, there was a division, the SEC. So there were over 3,500 Securities and Exchange Commission reports on high-level people that were in the process of being convicted of insider trading. So that was evidence that was destroyed. There were thousands of people that should have been in the building that weren't, that were pre-warned. There was all kind. There's so much here, Sarah, that I'm not prepared to talk about it.
Well, and then the trade. That's okay. It was. I just saw
I just
some.
Don't,
of that.
I'm not prepared to talk about it intelligently. I know what happened. I know you're right. I just don't know specifically what it is without going back and doing some more specific researching. But it had an awful lot to do with just, you know, it's never done for one reason. I mean, it was done to mobilize. I mean, remember the year before. In September of 2000, we were told that PNAC, something for the New American Century, PNAC, we needed a catalyzing event, something like on the scale of Pearl Harbor, in order to mobilize the people behind the wars that they had already planned, the plan to take over the countries in the East, in the Middle East, in the Eurasian continent. The only question here, and now you'll have to have another guest in, somebody that really knows this stuff, and I'd recommend a gentleman by the name of Christopher Bolland, Bollyn, who's an amazing expert, who I only found after I wrote my book, because I'm out there looking to see if anybody's come up with this before I decide to write it, because I want to see if it's already been said. What's the point if it is? But what I learned from him is that we've got a little, well, I learned all this a long time ago as far as who's running the world. We know about the Rothschilds, but we never see them in the Forbes magazines of the richest people in the world because they're so rich they don't even want to be there. But we've got something like eight families that have half the wealth of the world in their pockets. And the Rothschilds, who are originally known as the Bauers, B-A-U-E-R-S, Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, changed their name to the Rothschilds, which is Red Shield in German, I guess. And they control the Zionist nation of Israel. So a lot of people, they don't know what Zionist or fascist or Nazi or whatever all of these terms mean, but they all are pretty much the same thing. The neocons, neoconservatives, the ones that always want the wars. Well, the fascist Zionists that are being led by the Rothschilds, and Israel is they're controlling it. It's like Israel is the tail wagging the dog, and the United States is the dog who is doing their dirty work for them in the Eurasian continent and trying to, and Israel wants to, they want control of that. They want all of that, which is of no value to us. I mean,
well, and they have, I want you to continue your thought, but they have as much respect for the American people as they do for the Palestinians or Palestinians or anybody else.
We're Golem to them. Mm-hmm. We're going to them. Now, if anybody that wants to call me an anti-Jew or whatever, I am a Jew. I'm a Russian Orthodox Jew on my mother's side.
Excellent.
My entire family from my mother's side was Russian Orthodox Jew, and my entire mother's side of the family practiced their their religion. And when I went to their various religious ceremonies, I practiced their Jewish ceremony. Now, my mother's husband died of cancer when he was 33. So her husband, his name was Wallen, died of cancer. Now, there's a Sheldon Wallen out there, and I wonder if there's any relationship, but he was an author that talked about the inverted totalitarianism of the United States. So interesting that that name was similar. But my father was a Lagio, and he was an Italian. And when my mother married him, he wanted me raised Catholic, and I was raised Catholic. I was 10 months old when he died of cancer, and he was probably 36, I believe. So my mother raised three children alone. My two sisters were half-sisters, were Jewish. So I was raised Catholic by three Jewish women. So I have nothing against the Jews. And most of the Jews will be against Zionism when they understand what it's about. And so
I agree with that.
Zionists are looking for world domination. They're looking for this one world order. They're looking for total control and the enslavement of all populations and the dumbing down of all the cattle out here to do their bidding, and then they'll depopulate, they'll dumb us down.
And you've seen all of that documented.
I've seen everything documented tenfold. You need to get Christopher Bolin on your show because
I just want to make sure that everything that somebody states is documented and that people understand, and that people understand that, because nothing that I want on my show isn't something that it has a lot of facts behind it and someone not just making up a theory. And
no,
yeah,
that's good to hear, because one of the things that we have that they didn't imagine hundreds and hundreds of years ago, I mean, this is a generational thing that's been going on. God knows how long. It could be 800 years for all I know, but it's been going on for many generations. And this attempt to take over the world the way that they're doing, the last in my heart, what I see is the last, I'm trying to put it in the right words, block to them is the American population and the fact that we're armed to the teeth, our Second Amendment. If you look at a documentary called Innocence Betrayed, it goes over the histories of all of the governments that disarmed their people. And it's the best argument to show to anybody that's anti-Second Amendment. But going back to Israel, they're against free speech. They're the first ones to shut you down. They're the first ones to say, you can't speak against us. If you do, it's a crime, even if it's true. So, I mean, they're the enemy. Now, one of the problems is, though, is if you look at who our government is ruled by, look up who in the United States government holds dual citizenship with Israel. And the list is amazing. It goes on and on and on, and past goes on and on. And so we're controlled by that little country. And when we talk about the bankers controlling us, who are the Rothschilds? The Rothschilds are the world's bankers for hundreds and hundreds of years. So most people think the power is in the presidency or in our government. They don't recognize the fact that they've been corrupted to the core. I mean, I don't care where you look, the military, the pharmaceutical industry, the business industry, the banking industry, it's just corrupted to the core. And while there's great people in every industry, how do you explain the 60 murders in the holistic doctor's field that were said to be suicides?
Yeah, that's because crazy. And they're helping so many people. That's why people are... You start to. That's why people are going to this whole conclusion of the evil, and you start thinking, "Well, gosh, maybe there's something behind it because this really is evil, or psychopathic to a extreme."
Yeah, psychopathic is a step down from sociopathic. Now I'm going to stop one step shy of David Icke. David Icke takes that to a next level, which says the sociopaths are being controlled by aliens. I'm not there yet, Sarah. I'm saying yes, sociopathy is ruling the world, and psychopaths are in control. They're willing to jump and step all over anybody and crush anybody, men, women, and children, and do their pedophilia and whatever in order to be part of the club and to be rich and sign this
they
deal
don't care.
With the devil.
They don't care at all.
And then they'll raise their children to be immune to it by treating them badly so that they are no longer empathetic. I am incredibly empathetic. I cry over the death of our enemies' warriors. I've written poetry about it. You are my brother. I mean, I am a peaceful person. I want peace on the earth. We can be incredibly...
I think most people who aren't
absolutely.
Devils or whatever they are do want peace.
But they're afraid. I mean,
yes,
give me an
afraid.
Example. It was the 50th year anniversary. This is 4 years ago. And he's not a friend, but he's an acquaintance. He lives in the same town as I do. And I met James in the supermarket. And I said, "Hey, Jim, how you doing?" He goes, "Good, Pat. How are you doing?" I said, "You know what today is?" He goes, "What?" I said, "It's the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination." And he put his finger to his mouth and he goes, "Shh." And then he looked to his left and he looked to his right like there was a CIA agent behind that was about to cap me off. People are afraid. They're.
It's so amazing how afraid they are because I know that there is a lot more support for this, but people won't talk about it. They will in their homes, but they're very careful not to talk about it publicly.
Because they don't want to be the nutter. They, you know, I've got a whole. I've got.
They don't want to be me. Or you.
Sarah, we need 1,000 times more of you. And
I know.
We know something. I think, you know, we may only be 5% of the population, maybe only 8% of the population right now, but there's 20-30%, there's 50% that know what's going on, just don't want to throw everything they've worked for away in order to back it and to stand up for the right thing, but they
I
have
think
to recognize
that,
the
But sorry, I think I don't want to interrupt you because I want you to keep your thought. I think that as long as we stay professional and we don't get nutty, and that we have our facts straight, that the average person will respect us for what we're doing. And it's really important that we stay off the nutty path.
No doubt about it. And not hit them with too much too hard, because I don't know if when you awoke, but I awoke during my divorce because I just, you know, I still had this Perry Mason idea of justice. And I just couldn't understand how that just didn't apply at all, and how all of these lies and all of this garbage can destroy a family rather than put the children in the middle and protect them, and everybody could come out whole, because I had done that. I'd come out to where I was earning 3 times more after I got separated than I ever had made in my life, and all that got me was poorer than I had ever been before in my entire life. So I began my awakening there. I finished my awakening during the Waco incident and studying the documentary Waco, The Rules of Engagement. And they'll try to pin it on the guy as a pedophile when he had a complex, what would they call it? Not a complex. You know, they use military terms. He had a religious group that had their own beliefs that were all good people. And they bought and they sold weapons when they found that was profitable. And that's how sporting goods shops do that all over the country. I mean, that's nothing new. But the ATF tried to use this as a public relations boom for them. And they were ready to do all of their magic and come out smelling like a rose. And instead, they screwed it up. And then the FBI came in and put an end to it. And they murdered those people, 78 of them.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And when you listen to the children burning and dying of smoke inhalation, they set that place up to burn like a potbelly stove. That was my final awakening. And you need people, if you're listening to this, please take the hour and a half it takes you to find Waco, The Rules of Engagement, and listen to the words as they're lying to us. All of the liars said, "We didn't fire a single shot into the compound." They're talking about once it's ablaze and it's an inferno and people are trying to get out, there are snipers there firing full automatic at anybody trying to get at the windows. They wanted everybody dead. They
oh,
didn't
that's
want any
terrible.
Stories.
Oh, I
and
didn't
you can
realize
see it.
That. That's terrible.
Yeah, you need to watch it because what was going on, and I'm not sure who was running the FLIR photography out of the helicopter that circled above, but FLIR stands for forward-looking infrared photography, FLIR. And it doesn't see things in color. Although it looks like black and white, it's not. It's seeing things in heat. So the whiter, the hotter it is, the whiter it is, the cooler it is, relative coolness, because Texas is going to be hot, but the cooler it is, it's darker. So as you're seeing full automatic fire, you're seeing blast, 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 blast of white hot fire going into the compound from multiple points as they kept the people from coming out. The FBI did nothing but cover that up, destroy the evidence, just as they got rid of all the steel in 9/11, and they got it over to China as quick as they could, and they got rid of the evidence. The FBI is really good at covering up evidence and protecting the guilty, protecting the criminal elite. That's what they do. And
what
the
do you
problem
think,
with
what do you think about? You know, some people say once the law enforcement, the FBI, stop protecting the criminal elite, that's when the country, you know, that's when the revolution occurs. That's when they can't do it anymore.
That's bull. I think the first things we need to do is start arresting and prosecuting and convicting the criminals one after another. And
but that's the criminal. Like, that's them. We got to have them stop protecting the criminals. You know, the people.
We
in
have.
Position,
well, do we?
Go ahead.
They become complicit, and if they want to, I liked what Mr. Steele said on your program, that there's a level of forgiveness that we can't allow. I mean, you cannot continue and be forgiven. However, if you will come forward and name the people that put you into that blackmailing situation and testify to that, then we're going to allow you to continue. And now they won't be obligated to vote along party lines and to do the bad things. But there are people that just need to be hung. They need to
I
be
agree
shot.
With that, because they're just going to be cancer in our, unless you don't get rid of them, they're going to be cancer.
They'll influence the people around them. They'll use their psychopathy
yes.
to influence the people around them.
Some people think that they're this evil, this masterminded evil that's going on in every part of our society, whether it's war, drugs, our medicine, I mean, just all over. It's just
yes.
crazy when you see the numbers, you know, the suicides with their soldiers. It's just everything's off the charts. And so it's creating so much chaos. Some people think that they're doing this on purpose because they're Luciferians, they're crazy, and they think if they do this, that'll bring back the Lucifer.
Well,
do you believe?
I can't tell you what
they
could, I mean,
I
it
kind of makes
that
sense
worship.
That they could be that nutty and do something.
Well, I do believe that they believe that drinking a child's terrified blood filled with adrenaline gives them a boost and makes them feel like they're going to live longer. Whether it does or not, I don't know. I don't care. All I know is if you do it, I want to put a bullet in your head.
Exactly. Well, and that's my
I don't care what you use for an excuse. Let's use C60. Let's use homeopathy. Let's use good nutrition. Let's use other things to live longer. Let's get rid of the evil. I mean, this is a war, and the problem is we're not shooting back yet. So when you're talking about, you know,
well, I think it's an info wars. I think that we can, you
well,
know,
yes,
using the Alex right. Jones, you know,
yes.
words, it's an info war. And I think that we have to be careful of, you know, Second Amendment rights is so
yes.
important, but we have to be careful not to get violent.
Yes.
At this point, because they're just going to slaughter people. And
well,
I just don't
that would
think
be used to shut
works.
Us down.
Yeah.
That would be used to shut us
gotta
down.
Follow, you got to follow the Gandhi and the, you know, Martin Luther King and Jesus's way of turning the minds and the hearts of the people. You have to.
Yes. Yes and no. And I'll give you an example. First of all, I think President Trump is doing what he can do considering the limitations of the presidency that is under attack from all directions.
Yeah, he can
I
only
love
do
what
so
he's
much.
Trying to. Exactly. But if we, the people, go to the Bundy Ranch, use our Second Amendment rights and stand up against evil, then maybe we prevent slaughter. Maybe we can prevent it if we had done that at Waco. maybe we can stand up and start prosecuting these people.
Well,
maybe
I do, but I think you have to be careful, though, because if you go and you act like a, you know, the Patriot
movement. I'm not saying act out.
No. The Patriot movement.
Defensively.
Defensively, but you have to be careful because as soon they'll turn it, they'll make the Patriot movement look like a bunch of, you know,
again, we're saying they. So let's identify they. When I use they in a derogatory manner, I use it all capitals. So when I'm writing and I use the word they in caps, I'm saying the dark side, the shadow government, the
mass media that they control.
Yes, the six corporations that control 90% of everything we hear, read, or see on TV, the radio, and in the newspapers. Right. That has to be broken up. That's a monopoly. It's our airwaves. We need to take them back. We need to take back our elections. Our rights are taken away. Our unverifiable elections. People don't realize that since the 90s, we've proven these voting machines to be fraud. This is nothing new, and yet we still haven't fixed the problem. We have to fix that. We have to make it illegal for people to hold dual citizenship with another country. How can we put America first, second, and third if a third of our representatives represent Israel?
I agree.
We can't. So that, there are things that we can do, but we have to take our Justice Department back. There's a war going on in the Justice Department, in the Pentagon, in the CIA, in the FBI. There are fantastic people in every agency, and there are nasty son of a guns in every agency.
Well, and that's
we need to weed them out.
Well, and I think once those agencies stop protecting the criminal elite, the people who are controlling our country, that and they start actually prosecuting and doing the job that they should be doing, that will make a huge difference.
There's no question about
but
it. We can have paradise instead of hell.
Yeah, and we need to win the information war. I'm going to keep using that because I think it's a great term.
It is. I call it the awakening. It's the same
awakening
thing. It's basically people need to be aware. But I think people are aware, but we're afraid. And I think that every time we take one act of courage and we put it out there, that 10 people are braver. That will then perhaps say something when they might not have, write something when they may not have. And then as we see prosecutions be brought forth, which is why, again, back to this book, Cheney is complicit as all hell. Secretary of
Treasury.
Would
he just get paid? I mean, why would these guys do that? Are they mind controlled?
Ever hear of a country called Halliburton?
Yeah.
Ever hear of a country company? Yeah.
So let's
ask the question. Why 9/11? What was that catalyzing event all about? Yeah, sure, we're to get Israel to get the bidding of the United States to do their dirty work in the Middle East, but also for all the war machines, the military industrial congressional media complex to take power and to use that to grow their own wealth and power.
Somebody like Cheney who helps orchestrate the whole thing or runs the whole thing. Now, is he a sociopath? Is he a Luciferian? How does somebody get to the point where they're just so nut jobby like that?
Anybody that dark has to be at least at the level of psychopath. Whether or not he takes part in drinking of children's blood and all of this stuff, who knows? All I know is that somewhere along the line, he decided to go on to the dark side. Now, the reason I'm pointing directly at only at this moment Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney is that Donald Rumsfeld was the Secretary of Defense when that happened. He had to be absolutely integrated into the entire event in order to stand down, to have the simultaneous war games going on, to declare the $2.3 trillion missing the day before and then have
that
obliterated the next day. Why do I point at Dick Cheney? Because he was the one while President Bush was in the second grade school or whatever it was in Florida reading with the children. He was the one in the PEOC, the presidential, what was that called? Presidential Emergency Operations Center, which is under, I think, the East Wing. It's basically to assure communications. It's a bunker under the East Wing of the White House. He was the one that was in there, and Secretary Mineta was the one that testified that while he was there and the plane was approaching the, we have to get back to this point because we talked about the do-si-do, but we never finished how did that plane that was supposedly hijacked, what happened there. But there was a Navy adjutant that came in and told President Cheney, Vice President Cheney, that the plane is 50 miles out. And then he'd come back and say it's 40 miles out, it's 30 miles out. And anybody can look it up and say, just look up Secretary Mineta testifies about 9/11 incident, and it'll pop up and it'll show that exact thing. But he says it's 30 miles out, it's 20 miles out, it's 10 miles out. And at some point there, the adjutant says, do the orders still stand? And then Mineta testifies that Cheney whipped his head around and said, of course the orders still stand. Did I say anything differently? Or to the contrary? I'm trying to paraphrase it, something like that. Did I say anything to the contrary? So in other words, he let the plane in. Now, this is the most heavily guarded airspace in the world. Now, we have to recognize that there's three major airports there, so they're used to seeing planes flying in and out of Dulles, out of BWI in Baltimore, out of Reagan International. But they're all on flight paths. They know they're coming. They're pre-qualified. They know. This plane that disappeared over West Virginia was in a radar-free area when it disappeared, and when it reappeared, coming inbound now. Now this is an hour. I can't remember for exact, so I'm going to ignore that. It was coming in after it was reacquired on radar. It wasn't on the transponder. That was the word I was looking for earlier, and I couldn't remember. Planes have transponders. So when these planes crashed in the World Trade Centers, the transponders for those planes were still in flight. That's part of the 9/11. Pilots for 9/11 Truth testimony and documentary that you can see. But the transponder wasn't showing on the incoming plane that we just talked about with Cheney. So all of the reacquisition protocols that the ground control would have had were not obeyed. They were not taken. They were not followed. And here's this plane flying in at breakneck speed. The person who had her on her screen, I can't recall her name, Danielle something or other, said it was operating it was moving like a military plane. In other words, these military planes, even though they're similar size, jet planes flying, they have a maximum flight speed that's, 100 or 150 knots greater than the commercial version. So that's one of the things that happened on one of the Pentagon or one of the World Trade Center planes. It was flying faster than they could understand. The wings would have come off under some of the testimony that was shown because they weren't designed for it, whereas the military planes were. So this plane that we were talking about coming into the Pentagon was allowed to come in. Now, it wasn't just the fact that the jet fighters that meet these unidentified planes routinely in pairs, I think F-14s would have gone up and intercepted the plane. That just would have been normal operating procedure. But that day, their excuse was that they were all out over the Atlantic Ocean on a drill.
They were having a war games drill the same day.
Yeah.
It was just crazy. So now how can, because we have very little time, how can people get a copy of your book? Give them the name of the book and where they can get it.
Very simple. I'm going to give you a way to get it for free. And then in about a month, because only the first order came in, it's going to be very small. But for now, just use my name, Sarah Patrick Alagio, Alaggio, and go to my and give them my email address. It's ios@sovernet, which stands for Southern Vermont, SOVER.net. I've already sent out hundreds of copies of this for free, and if they simply say, please send me a copy of your book, and they send me an email to ios@sovernet. I will be happy to send them a PDF version, which will include a separate JPEG of the cover so they can see how nice it's going to look in case they want to get the paperback when it's available. The paperback will be available. I retired from my business in September, so that 17-year-old website is now down. I'm in the process of building a new one that will be available in its infancy on Pelagio.net, Pelagio.net, but that won't be up for another 3 weeks or so, and even then it'll be in its infant stages. But when you get to, it'll show up door to door. That's the name of a monthly publication I used to contribute to the AT&T paper. So I liked that title and I wanted to use it again. So door to door will be the, yeah. And so meanwhile, let them get it for free. I'm going to charge it's going to be, I think, $10, including shipping. So that way I can keep the price as low as possible, but the PDF copies will be free. And then there's a book I wrote in 2007 called The Judgment, and it's a fiction about taking back America. And it's a Clancy-esque fiction that's showing the revolution that you talked about earlier that you didn't want to talk about, but I did. And I basically said, there are other ways to fix this problem. But I left that book with really a very nice, hopeful outcome. But we need, what did JFK say? He said, what cannot be accomplished in a peaceful revolution will be accomplished in a violent one. People keep pointing at Gandhi and Jesus as being peacenicks, but guess what? When push came to shove, Jesus turned over the tables.
Oh, well, yeah, you do that last. You do it's
you do that.
Last
you give it every chance
option.
To give the system a chance to work. I 100% agree. I do not want to see a civil war in this country. But if it comes down to enslavement of my children's children to a global
evil,
or fighting the last battle, us against them, I'm ready. I'm ready to die. And there are many patriots out there that feel exactly the way that I do. They're just trying to give President Trump a chance. Now, he is doing his job. He's doing everything he can. We need to stand up en masse and back him up and let the shadow government know, we know who you are. We know where you live. We hear you breathing.
Wow.
And if you want to play this game any further, we can fight you. And I am not a person that wants to go to war, but I am absolutely willing and able to go to war. And I think we all need to understand that there are some things that are worth fighting for, and this is one of them. It's our children's future.
Well, thank you so much for joining the program. I really appreciate
it.
And I'll have all your information up there so they know how to get your book.
Thank you so much for the invitation and for giving me a chance to share this. It's a work of love and labor for our country, and we all have to recognize that we each have a little bit of power. We each have a straw to add to that camel's back, and it's just a matter of time before we reach that critical mass and it comes down. The odds are in our favor, but only if we have the courage to execute our power.
Thank you.
God bless you, Sarah, and thank you so much.